Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. An official start to the weekend here in the Crescent City. Happy Thursday, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the show. If you're listening here on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans, thank you for listening to the podcast wherever you may be in the world. Yes, apparently the NOLA Drinks Show is big in Japan. Maybe not that big in Japan, but sort of big. I was just telling BJ's working the board as he always is. Beach, how you doing, buddy?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you very much. And I was just telling BJ, who produces the show, as we all know, as he always does, that I was looking at some of our podcast numbers recently, and there's been a significant uptick in Japan. So
huge
I actually
in Japan. Huge
dude,
in Japan.
Dude, I actually get to say big in Japan, even though the numbers are not that overwhelming. But I mean, I feel like Spinal Tap, man. It's pretty cool. So yeah, there you go. So if you are listening to the podcast, and a special shout out to my friends in Japan that are listening to the podcast, thank you very much for supporting.
That's awesome.
Thank you, man. Hey, it's great. The other one that was also very interesting, BJ, is that there were, I think, two or three listeners, in Namibia.
And where?
Namibia.
And where is that?
Southwestern Africa.
Holy smoke.
Which I actually knew that. And wow. And I was like, I had no idea that people were big in the cocktail scene and drink scene and all that stuff there.
I would have never have guessed that.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So,
and I wouldn't necessarily say big in Namibia, but a presence, a foothold.
You,
there's a toehold.
Footprint.
Footprint, right on. So really cool stuff, friends, today. Got a good show coming up for you. We are going to be talking with Simone Menache, who is with the Grow On Urban Farm. We're going to get to him in just a few minutes. Great organization here in New Orleans. They got a cool event coming up on Saturday. And then in the second hour, Sal Mortilaro, and I hope I'm saying Sal's name right, is a certified beer judge, does a lot of home brewing stuff and some things like that. And he's going to be on the show. We're going to talk about beer. Yeah, I'm not going to make it any more complex now. We're going to talk about beer, talk a little bit about the beer scene in New Orleans, a little bit about home brewing. He does reviewing for a Beer Connoisseur magazine, just an expert in all things beer. And I know we're going to taste some beer. So I'm pretty excited about that. That'll be a lot of fun. That'll be in the second hour. Folks, a couple things I wanted to mention real quick before we get to Simone here is that two events that I wanted to highlight coming up soon. Monday, June 5th, No Kid Hungry, which is a charity here, and the tagline, Share Our Strength. Special benefit dinner taking place at Compare La Pan down in the Warehouse District, and it's going to be a really cool event. Again, it is Monday, June 5th, and we have Chef Nina Compton there at Compare La Pan, who that is her place, or of which she is the executive chef, I should say. And then she's teaming up with Michael Galata, Aaron Brooks, and Michael Pierolo, some pretty big names there, of course, in the chefing world. And they're going to come in and help cook this dinner, 6 p.m. Monday, June 5th, $150 a person. That is all inclusive. It benefits No Kid Hungry New Orleans. Again, what we want to point out here is nearly one in six children in this country struggle with hunger, including more than one in four kids in Louisiana alone. Can imagine that that's the case here in this state. No Kid Hungry is working to end childhood hunger in this nation by ensuring that kids start the day with a nutritious breakfast. And again, this is a fundraiser for that. And you know the food's going to be fantastic. You know the drinks. Our good pal Abigail over there running the bar going to do a great job with that. Again, $150 all-inclusive, worthy cause. Monday, June 5th at 6 p.m. For reservations, you can call 504-599-2119. Again, 504-599-2119, or visit comparelapan.com, which is C-O-M-P-E-R-E Lapan, L-A-P-I-N.com. Also, coming up Saturday, friends, over on the North Shore, Pontchartrain Vineyards has the Jazz in the Vines concert coming up, their spring series ongoing as it is. And, man, it's going to be a great act this Saturday. Kenny Neal, who is a fantastic blues, swamp blues master, right? Dude lives in Baton Rouge right now, but he's from that neck of the woods originally. I don't think Baton Rouge specifically. A fine blues player, fine swamp blues player. First time he's ever played at the winery. That's going to be this Saturday, 6:30 to 9 p.m. up at Pontchartrain Vineyards, just about an hour north of us where we're sitting here in the CBD. And it's going to be a great concert. There's food trucks out there, as they always have. You sit outside, outdoor concert series, under the stars and among the vines, as they say. Just $10 a person at the gate. Gates open at 5 o'clock. And also, there's a special offer, which is an online-only offer, and that ends at 3 p.m. the day of the show, this Saturday. And you can get two tickets and a bottle of wine. And the winery this time is offering a choice of their Voodoo Zinfandel or their Off Dry Rue Saint Louis, which is a Blanc de Bois. And so you can get a bottle of wine and two tickets for $25. Bring a blanket, support the food trucks, go out there, see some great blues music. For more information on that, check out PontchartrainVineyards.com. Kenny Neal, check it out, Jazz in the Vines. Friends, Simone Menache. from Urban from Grow On Urban Farm. Welcome and talk right up into that microphone, Simon.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks for being here. And wanted to get in here with you before we take a break in a couple minutes and just get some intros out of the way. Tell us, so we'll get into the urban farming and into the organization. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Simon. Where are you from?
Well, I'm originally from Venezuela. Grew up in Venezuela in the outskirts of Caracas, actually state Miranda. Grew up in the remains of an attempt to build a sustainable community by my dad, which didn't really take on due to the political climate in Venezuela, which still continues on.
Yeah, absolutely. So when was this that this was going on?
This was 97.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, 97. Back when I was 13 years old.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you emigrate here with your family then at that point to the States?
We did. We took a vacation that never ended. so that was a little bit of a cultural shock and a little sad in that aspect. But, you know, a smart decision, nonetheless, from my parents.
Did you all come to New Orleans directly, or?
We moved to Miami with my mom's family.
Okay. Yeah. And how long have you been in New Orleans?
I've been in New Orleans for about 8 years now.
Okay. Yeah. And what prompted the move here, specifically to town?
Well, my older brother, he lives in New Orleans. He's lived here all his life, actually. It was after my dad passed away. It was a good opportunity to kind of reunite with family, and I came here to work with his yard maintenance operation for a few years, and then I parted and started doing my own.
Oh, so your brother had been here in advance of yourself and your parents, then I take it to coming.
Yes.
Oh, okay, gotcha. And had you been to New Orleans and visited prior to that and before you came here?
I had been here summer time, you know, for work or whatnot, you know.
Okay. Gotcha. And so was some of your connection, and I don't want to get into this because we're going to take a break in just a second, was some of your connection then into urban farming rooted in some of the stuff that your dad was up to and what the family was up to in Venezuela?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it came a lot out of nostalgia from missing an abundance of food, fresh food, and all kinds of snacks that I used to munch on while playing, building bonfires and sheds and shelters and whatnot.
Gotcha. Well, let's do this, BJ. We're going to take a little break here, and then we're going to come back we'll get into what Grow On is all about, get a little bit more about the organization, how things got going with y'all there, talk about the importance of urban farming, which is a key of what we're going to chat about here on the show, and then we're also going to talk about how you can get involved, how you can support the organization with a terrific event that they're doing called Second Saturday this Saturday evening here in town. Friends, coming back to the NOLA Drink Show. We'll be right on back.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu.
Life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Hey, little sub dudes. Poor man's paradise. Thanks for tuning in. Actually, well played there, BJ. It's kind of an appropriate song, as we talk about a little bit after the aftermath of Katrina and some of the people down, you know, more closer to the Gulf and things like that. And one of the verses is whipping up a corbillon because you could still get shrimp out of the bayou right after the storm. And so it's local production, local connection to food. You couldn't go to the grocery store, okay? So there were still ways to actually reconnect and eat after Katrina here down, you know, in the bayou and some places like that and down by the Gulf Coast. We're chatting with Simone Minash from Grow On Urban Farm. And an interesting background, Simone, as he mentioned in the first segment before we went to the break, moved to Miami from Venezuela. And we're talking a little bit during the break about sustainable community, Simone. And one of the things that you mentioned that you realized coming here was the disconnect from the accessibility and understanding. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but understanding of where food comes from.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. You know, coming to the States from a day to day of abundance on oranges and all kinds of fruits, and finding out at that these things were at a dollar plus at the stores was very shocking to me, and it showed clearly that food was very inaccessible here.
It's packaged, it's presented in a way that is not its state, you know, from where it right. comes from. And I was telling you something during the break, and I don't want to belabor this point too much. I mentioned that I lived in Honduras, and when I lived on an island in Honduras, and when I go to work in the morning, I would walk by and two, three times a year, I would just pick up a mango off the ground, and that was my breakfast walking to work. And I think that kind of thing we're sort of talking about here is that's how a lot of this world essentially works. And the way we're divorced from it here, where you go to the grocery store and it's ground meat in a styrofoam package wrapped in plastic, is not, you know, that's not where a cow comes from.
Right. Right. And it was perhaps a very practical and convenient way to feed the masses. And, you know, it did its job fine. Nowadays, I think we're overdoing it a little bit. And there is a lot of alternatives to this. So that's part of what we devote ourselves to at Grow On Urban Farms, is to showcase many different forms to grow your own food, whether it's microgreens or, you know, raised vegetable bed, aquaponic systems. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ways.
Well, you said something too, Simon, during the break that I think is a really good point, is that these things, I mean, okay, in an ideal world, we could all be a little bit more self-contained, I think, with how we eat mm-hmm. and support local and so on and so forth. But, you know, not everybody's going to raise livestock, okay, which we, you know, just practically, and not, we can't grow everything this time of year in Louisiana, all these other things. But this could be quite simple, where starting with, as you said, microgreens, or starting with just an herb garden that you use to flavor your salads and your proteins and things like that. That's a good thing to do.
Yeah, it's a good thing. It's a nutritious thing. It's beneficial for the environment. It's a way to supplement your food and to reduce ultimately.
And so reduce waste, reduce the carbon footprint that we're talking about of getting things to market.
Yeah.
So let's talk, Simon, a little bit about, tell me about the background of Grow On. We'll talk a little bit about what it is, and let's talk about how it got started.
So,
and in either order you want to take that question.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd like to certainly start with, you know, the fact that Grow On, it was started due to a necessity, you know, a necessity that seems to be very wide and spread, and perhaps spreading as we speak, you know. Food inaccessibility seems to be very real to me, since I came from an abundant place, mm-hmm. coming to a place where the food cost is significant. You know, it was just a thing that, yeah, you know, this could be not only, making it more accessible, but maybe a lucrative thing to do
okay.
as well.
Well, and let's back up a little bit. One of the things you just said, and this was sort of the point that I probably made very poorly about walking to work in Honduras and picking up a mango off the ground, is that I think, you know, as we know, that this is addressing a disconnect. Let me state it a different way. Addressing a disconnect with people and their food, understanding where it comes from, and understanding that it does not have to come from a supermarket, that it can come from your community. So community-based urban farming, right? Is that a fair assessment?
Right.
And so then do we see that mentality changing? So we'll just pick New Orleans, for example. Do we see that mentality changing where people are starting to embrace it more, understand it more? I think it in a weird way, I think that a lot of people think food comes, it's sort of like a magical thing. It appears in your grocery store. And I know people aren't that naive, but an actual connectivity of growing, you know, from farm to table, if you will.
Yeah, there's certainly a huge disconnect between people and food. In fact, the concept started as a U-Pick. You know, we were hoping for people to come in and pick their own food, you know, work an hour helping maintain the property and then, you know, take home some food. But we realized that people are so disconnected from it that they actually don't know how to pick up a berry or how to pick up peas or how to pick up things without tearing the plant off. Or, you know, it's really interesting. So we've tweaked the model a little bit so that, you know, to make it really easy for people to know what's accessible and, you know, and it's picked for them in many cases. And, you know, we have a few other things that we offer as well.
So essentially, so start out as a co-op kind of model, a neighborhood co-op model.
Yeah.
And then has grown into something where, okay, so you're teaching people how to farm essentially a little bit. And I think, to your point, like taking something that you don't kill the plant or something might grow back if it's something that will grow back.
Yeah. Yeah. You know how to propagate plants as well. You know, the idea is to inspire, really. It's to inspire the community that they can do this. And if they don't have the space to do it, they can help us produce. So they can take a share.
So yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. How does it actually work? If somebody just, you know, Joe community member wants to get involved and start to do something, how does that actually happen?
So we've got a schedule as of now, Monday through Sunday. It's 10 to 4. And within those hours of operation, people can come in and do work trade, mm-hmm. Which means they can help out with the maintenance and production of the farm, and in turn they get credit for that time that they can exchange for things that we can provide to them at the farm, such as soil, starters, workshops, maybe berries and herbs if we've got anything like that available.
Okay, so they can actually take home some produce if the stuff is available, but also then they can get, like, so supplies. So if they want to start taking lessons learned, some of the experience, so they can get things that they need, some of the resources, raw materials, if you will, to actually take it into their own backyard and plant their own garden.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's really cool. When did that come about as far as, I think, you know, what we're getting at here is what you said is addressing, excuse me, the wider issue of people not understanding, excuse me, not understanding how to do this. So when did that kind of click for you? Was it when you first started doing the co-op, people would come out and pick, and you're like, man, we need to get people some soil and teach them how to plant stuff and start there?
It was really, you know, as a form, just I think it's been developing, you know, a lot. The concept hasn't necessarily, you know, it didn't start as it is right now. It's been evolving a lot. Mm-hmm. So, like I said earlier, you know, we were hoping for people to first pick, you know, their own, and that didn't seem to work out. So we've developed a few other forms for people to participate, you know.
And I like the idea that we're talking about being able to export the lessons learned and sort of broaden the territory in which this is taking place then. Is that a good way to say it, perhaps? Meaning expanding into their own backyard is a good way to spread the love.
Right, right. And yeah, therefore we do provide things as soil that we built at Grown as well. We encourage soil building in the community, and we...
Can you tell people what that is, just so they know?
Yeah, soil building is pretty much what it sounds like. It's building farming soil, and you do that through compostables and through other growing mediums such as...
So we're ensuring that the soil is actually capable of supporting the agriculture, right?
Right.
Because I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand that too, that certain soil types are good for growing certain things, certain areas are bereft Absolutely. Of soils that will support things.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we like to do some of that also. Talk about, we give workshops on soil building and that sort of stuff, you know, to get them to differentiate cacti soil from the soil that your basil may like.
Okay, great. Simone, stick around a little bit. We're going to take the bottom of the hour break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're chatting with Simone Menashe from Grow On Urban Farm, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the organization, and then we'll get to the important event that they have coming up on Saturday night and how you can get involved. Friends, come on back to the NOLA Drink Show.
Market is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pentalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market. Making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranac's, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, general manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucouleurs. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's grand dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon dining room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint, and it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans or in podcast land, wherever you may be. And yeah, if you're listening to the radio and you'd rather listen to the podcast on your own terms, at your own time, you can check out NolaDrinks.com. And hey, all the information there. We're on iTunes, we're on Google Play, TuneIn Radio, and probably a couple other things. Who knows? We are chatting with Simon Menashe from Grow On Urban Farm. Simon, thanks for being here today. I appreciate it.
Happy to be here.
Excellent. We're talking obviously about urban farming and a bit about the organization. And Simon, we're talking about lots of different things about where we didn't touch on this. When did the organization actually start?
It actually got started about 2 years ago. I guess we could say July 1st of 2015.
Okay. And where are you located? We'll come back to that part too, but where are you located?
We're by the St. Rock neighborhood, New St. Rock Market on Urquhart. Two blocks north from St. Claude.
Great.
Between St. Rock and Spain.
And one of the things that you were talking about, which I think is really important, and obviously in that neighborhood is exemplary of this, is that expanding the program, one of the terms that I like to use, and I know I'm sure you guys do too, that, you know, when we talk about agriculture, we talk about urban farming, these sorts of things, access to food. We're not talking about just the ecology. We're also talking about investment in human capital and the importance of human capacity building to do all of this kind of stuff. And something you said during the break that I find really interesting is some of the next step for the program is to look at, and especially in that neighborhood, some of the blighted properties, a little bit of open spaces and things that are still there, expanding the program into community farming there.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I believe that there's an issue, obviously, with blighted properties in New Orleans. And there's also an issue of food deserts, which is, I don't know if you're familiar.
Please explain it for everybody listening.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about a 3-mile radius where there is no unprocessed food, no tomato, no lettuce, a lot of alcohol and chips and canned food, but nothing unprocessed in a radius of 3 miles or more. Those are the areas we would like to focus on next, and utilize the blighted properties around those areas to do more installations using repurposed materials such as pallets and whatnot, and use the grounds for training as a training ground for future urban farm managers that can potentially take care of specialty items for restaurants, distilleries, breweries, maybe even the closest grocery.
So we are talking about a much broader thing. So we're not just talking about planting produce in a particular space. We're talking about, and you used the term art form, which I really like, before we went on the air, people producing other things beyond just, okay, and I don't want to oversimplify things or under or overstate things. But we're not just talking about growing vegetables. We're talking about other things.
Yes, and that's one of the things we love most about Second Saturday, which is basically an opening of the St. Claude area.
This is the event this Saturday evening. We'll get into the details of that, right. But just so people know, it's an open public event, fundraising event, right?
Right, for the whole St. Claude area, actually. And we then jump on to it with our Second Saturday, in which we encourage our neighbors, immediate neighbors, to come out, set out a table, and show what they got to offer, you know, to the neighborhood. Whether it is, you know, brewing beer or performance arts, we've got a stage, poetry, you know, whether it is that or whether it's visual arts such as ceramics or, you know, woodwork.
So it's encouraging production of many things on a community level, and then creating a venue for people to go show what is being produced in the community in addition to foodstuffs.
Yes, and you know, that could be bread. Maybe the neighbor around the corner makes some great bread. That's all they want. You know, they want to come and offer that. They can come and offer that at no cost to them. We see it as an offering to the community, not a market necessarily, but a place where you come and offer what you've got, what you love to give.
Nice. So it's a grassroots connection back to your community, opportunity to meet your neighbors that are probably doing something interesting that maybe you don't know.
Yeah, and then, you know, encouraging barter then on because, you know, your neighbor has a beer and you make the bread, and then you'll trade a loaf of bread for a six pack of homebrewed beer.
The way the world used to work, except for the six pack part, it was just beer. But yeah,
right.
Well, one of the things that we wanted to reference here too is our friends there at the Grodat Youth Farm there in City Park. And just for quick reference, if y'all are interested, if you go to the NolaDrinks.com website, go search the back podcast, September 29th of last year in 16, we did a feature on the show about the youth farm there. And you guys have a good relationship with them, which I think is great that y'all are working together as opposed to trying to be, you know, two of similar entities working against each other.
Absolutely. You know, certainly looking into working together in the future, serving as perhaps a graduate program to teach on urban farm installation and maintenance using upcycled materials.
Can you explain what that means for people?
Yeah, sure. Well, we think of one man's trash being another man's treasure kind right. of deal. And we do a lot of that. A lot of the materials that we've used to build a farm are repurposed materials that we've dug out of construction garbage cans or whatnot, or on the side of the road as something that somebody was obviously throwing away.
Great. Now, just so people are clear too, when you mentioned like an extended learning opportunity, potentially partnering with Grodat, well, I want to just clarify that is that they're a youth farm. So yeah. Part of their program is to educate youth on the importance of farming. And so you guys are looking to maybe create a continuing education opportunity
right.
after they get through that program.
Right. You know, more focused on actual installations and maintenance of installations and, you know, dealing with restaurants and, you know, all that's involved in urban farming and delivering this
right.
to the community.
Right. Okay, cool. So we talked about the human capital part about this a little bit, and let's talk a little bit more about the educational component, because I think this is really interesting that you can come to Grow On and you can actually participate by getting your hands dirty, if you will, but yeah. then you guys are doing actual education programs, so it's stuff that you as another means to perpetuate the program and the understanding.
Right. Yeah. You know, the education aspect of it is to make it as replicable as possible and to generate that workforce that could potentially feed New Orleans and other cities that may be having the same issues, such as blighted property and blighted property, essentially, since that's kind of what we're aiming to use more of.
Now, are you finding with the people that you're educating in the program, is it a lot of community leaders and those sorts of folks, or is it just somebody who wants to do this in their backyard, or a mix of the two?
It's a mix of the two. Mostly people interested in doing it in their own yards.
Okay.
And so we like to, you know, give them all kinds of knowledge on how to do that on their own. And not only the knowledge, but potential materials and you know, the actual plants and everything else they may need, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're hoping, at least aiming to cover as much as they need, so that they can do it themselves.
And start to do it themselves. That's cool. Well, what we're going to do, BJ, we're going to take a little break here. BJ working the board, as you always do. We're chatting with Simone Menashe of Grow On Urban Farm. We come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the farm itself, and then we're going to talk about the second Saturday event coming up this Saturday evening, something that you should get yourself involved in, because I know there's going to be good food, there's going to be music, I know there's going to be good cocktails, because I know the guy with that plan. So, friends, coming back here to the NOLA Drink Show.
I'm going to knock on a door. Wait for me on a Mardi Gras day. Sunday swing, I say, wait for me on a Mardi Gras day. Sunday swing, I say, tutti marci show is fine. Sunday swing, I say, tutti marci show is fine. Sunday swing, I say, tutti marci drink some wine. Sunday swing, I say, tutti marci drink some wine. Sunday swing, I say. Tutti Ma went up the ramp, looking for some cat to fam.
Hey ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in the Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Baggio heads up the Small Plates and Charcuterie Kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Now, if you ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now, all through the week, it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night, they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission if you're a cook or a waiter or a good musician. So if you happen to be just passing by...
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. Little Louis Jordan, Saturday Night Fish Fry. Again, BJ, well played, because we're talking about a Saturday night event here in North. Dude, BJ, you are on top of it, buddy. Working the board as you always are, producing the show. And he's just nodding, going, yeah, yeah. That's why I earn the big dollars here at GSO. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so cool. Little Saturday Night Fish Fry by Louis Jordan. Friends, we're chatting here with Simone Minaj of Grow On Urban Farm. And one other question before we get to the event, which I want to make sure we, you know, give proper airtime to on Saturday. What's in season right now? What are y'all growing? What's in the ground?
Well, like that question. Well, we're focusing on a variety of golden berries and tomatillos.
Let's start with golden berries. Okay, yeah. Well, what does that mean? What's part of that family?
So a golden berry looks very similar to a tomatillo.
Oh, okay.
It's got a pouch around it. It's got a cherry tomato looking fruit inside the bell, almost like a Chinese lantern, if you will. And we're also growing Chinese lanterns, which, you know, hence the name. So that giant golden berry, regular sized golden berry.
What's the flavor profile on that, or what would be a common use of that?
It is, it varies widely depending on whether it's ripe, you know, on its ripest or not. So anywhere between a passion fruit and a banana.
So fairly sweet then.
It's sweet. Okay. It is very sweet. It is very sweet, sometimes citrusy, if you will. And yeah, they're very fun looking, wonderful for garnishing drinks and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, we'll probably be having some of those out, for the public on Saturday. Yeah.
And you said tomatillos.
And then tomatillos, purple tomatillos specifically.
Oh, purple. Okay.
Which are a lot of fun as well. We've got starters as well. If you want to pick one up and grow one. A plant of your own.
Oh, wow.
We've got golden berry starters and tomatillo starters. So very fun plants to grow in New Orleans this time of the year.
And is this a good time? So with the starters, we probably would have wanted to have them as seeds in the ground a little while ago, but as a starter plant, this is a good time to put them in?
Yeah, absolutely. Because they are actually clones from the mother plant.
Oh, you're clones.
So
okay,
they're clippings that take root and therefore, you know, they're really already fruiting
by
the time you do that, actually. Some of the starters that we offer actually have, you know, some of the berries on them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, with tomatillos, I mean, those are one of my favorite things. And for listeners out there, if you want to make fresh homemade salsa, this is what you want for your base, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. And anything else you guys are kind of focusing on growing right now, too?
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, we've got microgreens that we cater to restaurants with.
What's growing on the microgreen front right now as we get into the warmer weather?
So we do have a greenhouse, if you will, where we grow them, and you know, we can shade them a little bit from the intense summer heat. We've got anywhere between sunflower shoots, pea shoots, rambo radish, microgreens, and those are very tasty garnishes or even salad base, you know.
Absolutely. And so you're partnering with restaurants, Simon, too, supplying some stuff?
Yeah, we have a few accounts with some restaurants, Sneaky Pickle, you know.
Oh, sure, yeah.
It's one of them. Their food is amazing. Juice Nola, also. And then a few others. And we just wanted to mention that we also have a variety of herbs and, growing that are going to be used for some of the cocktails on Saturday made by our friend Teray. So, if you are around and want some really great tasting with cocktails with fresh herbs, please.
You know. Yeah, and that's you anticipated my question, because I definitely wanted to mention Teray is a buddy of mine as well. And that's kind of how we all connected, really, was through him. And so I figured he was going to be using some of the local ingredients there in the cocktail program. So that's really exciting. Teray's a great bartender. You can go see him over at Bakery Bar on 1179 Annunciation, among other places. Is he working at Coquette now, too? He's working somewhere else.
Yep.
Yeah. So cool. And this is going to, let's talk about the event then, Simon. So Saturday evening, what time?
Saturday evening, 6 to 10.
Okay. And how do people, and you don't have to be there from 6 to 10, right? You can kind of come in, you're going to have music and bar and people with their local products and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so the way it will look is you can come in, we'll have a food pop-up, we'll have Crepes du Monde, and we'll also have some art being showcased by the immediate neighbors of ours. We'll have a DJ and a band as well, DJ Pompeii and Deluge playing also.
Deluge, is that? Or
Deluge.
Deluge. Okay, I'm not familiar with them. All right, cool. Something like that. We got it. Cool. Good music, I'm sure. It's New Orleans. Yeah. Can't really mess that up.
Yeah, wonderful music, wonderful ambience. Great conversation, a place for great conversations.
And now is there a ticket fee or suggested donation or anything along those lines to help out?
No, we're open, free to the public. We do welcome financial contributions to the artist and to the, you know, to the artist, whether culinary or the bartender.
Bartender. Give Touray a tip if he does a good job with your drink.
Absolutely.
He'll appreciate that for sure. So what's the address again, where the farm is?
2358 Urquhart Street.
2358 Urquhart Street. Now, how do people find you online, Facebook, web, all that good stuff?
We're at Grow On Urban Farms on Facebook. So growonurbanfarms.com is our website, and Grow On Urban Farms on Facebook and Instagram as well.
Great. So it's Grow On Urban Farms. I think I said urban farm once or twice, but it's farms, plural. Fantastic organization, friends, about 2 years old. You guys do the second Saturday. Do you do them all year long, every second Saturday?
We have. I think the only one we didn't do was on February. But other than that, we've kept this pretty steady.
Yeah. And is it starting to grow? And have you been doing this for a little while now? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For about a year.
Okay. And are more and more people starting to find out about it and come?
Yes, absolutely. And it's catching on. The neighborhoods are realizing that this is a wonderful way for them to come and express, show what they got, showcase what they got, and barter.
Are you finding that people are kind of wandering into the event just sort of seeing, I can go have a drink and see an urban farm maybe, or see somebody making beer or some, or not really see them making beer, but drink the beer they made, and then start to connect with the organization and what it's about? Is it serving as a good outreach vehicle to bring people into the concept, I guess is a better way to put it?
It really is. And the way we look at it is as a plant gallery. So, you know, we take second Saturday to showcase what we've got on growing, and you know how to do it yourself, and to inspire people that are just walking by and wanting to admire some art. And in this case, ours is plants and production and you know, we have a lot of other really wonderful neighbors that have wonderful things to offer as well.
Really cool. Simon, thanks so much for being here. And mentioned one more thing that you wanted to cover.
Yeah, you know, just to clarify our schedule, our hours of operation.
Oh, please. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's that's Sunday through Tuesday for 10 to 4.
Yeah. So Sunday through Thursday from 10 to 4, and people can drop by and see what's going on and get involved with the program. Is that how that works?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And if there's anything else that we need to sort of the cover, we'll put it up on Facebook, or I'll come back to it. It's not a problem. Again, Simon, thanks for being here. And who's helping you out here?
Just so, yeah. This is my wonderful, beautiful wife, Lauren.
Fantastic.
Yeah, which she's whispering all the details here.
Keeping you straight.
Get them right.
Yeah, awesome. And if there's anything you guys that we need to mention, I'll come back to it after the top of the hour. Not a problem. Absolutely. We'll clarify anything. Absolutely. Simon, thanks for being here. Friends, check out growonurbanfarms.com. Check them out on Facebook. Be sure to go check out the second Saturday event this Saturday, 6 to 10, there on Urquhart in the St. Rock neighborhood. All the details you'll need are online. We've shared the event on our Facebook page, the NOLA Drinks Facebook page. You can see it there. And yeah, please go support them. If you can't make this Saturday, just go the second Saturday in June or the second Saturday in July. See how that works. Friends, coming back here to the second hour of the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. We're going to take the top of the hour break. Then we're going to come back and talk beer with Sal. I like that. Friends, come on back.
For a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails, Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in the Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy one.
This is Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to hour number two of the Dine, Wine, and... No, it's not. It's the NOLA Drinks Show. I just heard Tim McNally's voice, who's the host of the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show. And if you listen to any of us, Tim or myself, regularly, you will know that I fill in from Tim from time to time when he is out of town judging wine competitions. And there was some sort of weird trigger. Talk about a Pavlovian response. I hear Tim McNally's voice, have lunch with Tim today, and then I start to call it his show. No, this is the NOLA Drink Show, and this is Brian Diaz, and I am here with you. Now that we've cleared that up, this is the second hour of the NOLA Drink Show, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. I'm pretty clear about that. A podcast, if you're listening to that, wherever that is. I can't tell you where you are, so I'm a little unclear on that. But that's cool. I'm glad that you're listening to a podcast or listening to the radio. However, you are listening to the NOLA Drink Show. I appreciate it. BJ working the board as he always is. Doing a fine job. BJ, how are you, buddy, here in the second hour?
I'm doing wonderful. We got beer now, so hey.
We got beer. So we learned something in the first hour, and let me clarify something here real quick, too, because Simon Minache there from Grow On Urban Farms was here, and there was a little, we wanted to clarify some things on their hours. Their hours are actually Saturday to Tuesday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and you can pop by, see what they're all about, do some bartering, that kind of thing. They also have a workshop schedule, which you can find on growonurbanfarms.com and the same name Facebook. Book will pop up for you, and they have their workshop schedule. Sometimes I'm guessing that happens in those hours and sometimes outside of those hours. So if you want to learn about urban gardening, community gardening, and how you can get involved with a fine organization and check out the details on Second Saturday coming up this Saturday, go check them out. Appreciate it. So now what we're going to do is we're going to kind of shift gears from urban farming a little bit, although there is a connection because we're going to talk about home brewing. We're going to talk about beer. And I am pleased to be joined by Sal Mortolero. And Sal, buddy, thanks for being here, man.
Thanks for having me, Brian. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so a lot of fun. And, you know, it's kind of fun because I don't want to kind of explain what I'm about to say here. You know, lots of times, Sal, on the show, we talk about issues. We're talking about urban farming, as you heard when you came in. And sometimes, maybe for some folks anyways, things are a little bit complex or a little esoteric. And beer can be a very complex subject, but it, you know, it's also an accessible subject. So we're going to talk about beer, man, for the next hour. So we don't have to be too heavy, right? I mean, we'll get into it, but we're talking about beer.
Let's talk about beer,
man.
Beer is one of those drinks that is very, as you noted, very accessible to the public. Everybody knows it. It can be both mystical as well as very complex, as you stated. You see beer commercials for the Super Bowl, right? You don't see wine commercials. I don't think people realize the depth that beer has to it, the nuances, the complexities. Everybody thinks all the major producers, Bud, Miller, Coors, the vast majority of people think that. But as the craft beer movement takes hold and gains in the United States, all across the United States, and even all across the world, it's becoming more of a more of an understood subject. How complex?
Yeah, I think we touched on something really important. Is that, you know, if your familiarity with beer comes from just, you know, the big houses, if you will, the Anheuser-Busch InBevs of the world, or Miller Coors, or whatever they're all called now. I think, aren't they just one big company anyway? Not going to comment on that too much. Is that, you know, really what we're talking about is this sort of craft brewery, you know, meaning neighborhood brewery. This is really something. This isn't brand new. Maybe it's revisioned in a certain way or understood in a different way. But this is how beer for centuries, millennia, was really made. It was made by a dude that you knew in your neighborhood.
That's true. Beer brewing has been going on for millennia. There's only one drink that's really older than beer, and that's mead. Yep. Beer has been going on since 2500 BC. And what's very interesting, especially with this craft beer movement, is it has become more of a cottage industry, if you will. The amount of all these new breweries that are popping up are the vast majority of people who were once former home brewers who just had a love and a passion, and they decided to go ahead and do it big. Get on the commercial scene, get out there, make beers.
Get good feedback from your friends and take the plunge, right?
Absolutely, yes.
You know, and I think, and let me clarify one thing too. When I said it's just, you know, it was made by some dude you knew in the neighborhood, that's actually not accurate too, because going way back millennia wise, women were also highly involved in brewing. And I think we want to make sure that we note that that's a very important component of this. In Egypt, I believe, right? Traditionally, women were the brewers.
Correct. Yeah. Traditionally, women are the brewers. That's absolutely correct.
There was an interesting article, maybe you saw this, Sal, that I read, talking about it was kind of wildly called the 5,000-year history of drinking or something. I forget exactly what it was. We shared it on Facebook if you want to check it out, and I'll share it again. But talking about, they took two theories, and bear with me on this, but the one of them was the drunk monkey theory, which is actually, are you familiar with that?
I'm not.
Okay, so the drunk monkey theory, if I'm going to get this right, is actually, this is a really old theory. So about something like 10,000 or 15,000 years ago, maybe it was even longer than that, mammals and such developed, it has to be longer than that, developed the ability to have an enzyme to digest fermented fruit. So the idea being that you didn't just have to pick it fresh off the tree. If something fell on the ground and was there for a day, could start to eat it. And so that goes back, obviously, a really long time with mammals. And but part of the theory then moved on. I'm forgetting the name of the theory. My apologies, specifically as it related to humans. But a lot of the theory was that, you know, human settlement was caused around grain farming, and that was associated with bread. But actually, there's some competing knowledge or some competing theories out there that it maybe wasn't actually bread. It was grains, but it was actually, you know, an ancient form of beer making. And some of this actually comes from, there was a 5,000-year-old find in China that was basically remnants of beer.
There's actually a great documentary on YouTube for those who subscribe out there called How Beer Saved the World. And it actually touches on that and how grain farming, hunters-gatherers to where we kind of basically became societies and how that spurred the Industrial Revolution as well as different advances in microbiology, which we might get into a little bit later, how beer actually literally changed and saved the world. It's a great documentary.
That's really cool. And I think that's an interesting point because I think in some of the argument for this too with the bread thing is, you know, bread can maybe be argued that it's a harder thing to make than beer. In a lot of ways, right? You got to get the bread to rise. You got to have, you know, all that kind of stuff. And beer is something, I'm not saying that it's easy to make per se, but that it's almost going to happen by itself in a certain sense if you put the certain set of processes in motion and ingredients in motion. And it's very compelling to think about that, you know, human settlement revolved not really around alcohol, around bread, but around beer.
Correct. That's absolutely correct.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty cool. And so anyway, so fast forwarding, so a little geek moment, I'll clarify some of this for you all on the Facebook page, but I'll share that article again. We talk about then the craft beer movement that's gone on here in the modern context. So as you said, a lot of home enthusiasts. I think a lot of the breweries that we see around here, the microbrews or craft breweries that have popped up here in the Southeast Louisiana area, yes, are exact examples of what you said, home, yes, brewers that take it to the next level.
Correct. There's a couple actually that are popping up over here. Just real quick off the top of my head, I know that Brew Corray down in the quarter, those are some former home brewers who decided to go big. Gnarly Barley and Hammond, former home brewer that decided to do it, as well as we're seeing Low Road Brewing as well.
Where are those guys?
Low Road Brewing is going to be in Hammond as well.
Okay.
And then new Louisiana Purchase Brewing in Ponchatoula. Was a former home brewer that decided to take the plunge.
Now, is that obviously when you transcend from home brewer to the commercial process, you've got to be dedicated. You've got to care about your craft. I was asking you during the break, is this like, you know, a little bit probably more complex than getting good feedback from your beer drinking buddies? Hey, man, you made a good beer. Why don't you open up a brewery? It's harder than people think.
It is to do things such as, for example, it's called scaling up the recipe. When you go from 5 gallons to a 30 barrel system, that's definitely a plunge. Logistics of financing, finding a place, going through all the ATC, the TBB with the federal government. There's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of money. And then, you know, especially I think in Louisiana, we're up to right at 32 or 33 breweries in the entire state. Competition is starting to get kind of stiff. You know, down over in Colorado, for example, 33 breweries is nothing. It's a different culture. You know, right, there's 33 breweries in a city in Colorado, but Louisiana, it's a little bit different. The logistics are a little bit different down here. The culture is a little bit different down here. And it can get pretty competitive, competing for shelf space, if you will. So, but it is a big plunge that a lot of people get into it and they're like, oh wow, there was more to this than I realized.
Let's do this, Al. We're going to take a break here and then come back. And let's talk a little bit more about the current scene in New Orleans. And we have plenty of time we're going to get back into the homebrewing thing, a good event that you guys have coming up in June and some other stuff. So friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're chatting with Sal Mortallaro, certified beer judge, beer guy, beer man around town and elsewhere. And we're drinking some nice beer. So we're going to come back and talk about that too. Friends, come on back.
On the farm, raise that chicken and raise that corn down yonder. Down on the farm.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event, or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Hey, everybody, let's jump and dive. Stop acting dead, cause we're alive. And drink Jack beer.
Drink Jack beer.
Good Jack beer.
Good Jack beer.
Hello, mellow Jack. Best beer in town.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Yeah, a little Dave Bartholomew Orchestra. Good Jack's Boogie. Another appropriate song for the show here. So Dave Bartholomew, I always say this whenever we play this tune, a couple things. One is that, of course, he was essentially the band leader for Fats Domino. So you should know that. If you don't know that, you should know that. But he was an accomplished band leader in his own right. And what was pretty common, as some of us of a certain generation will know, people would do promotional work and plugs and songs. And so this was actually a song that the Dave Bartholomew Orchestra recorded to promote Jack's Brewery beer here in New Orleans. So that was a little promotional plug. Good Jack's Boogie. You can find that. It's on our playlist on the YouTube channel. You can check that out. Friends, we're chatting with Sal Mortellaro, who is a certified beer judge, beer guy. And one of the reasons I wanted to have Sal on the show is actually to talk about a wide variety of things. But we were talking a little bit about the market here in New Orleans. And I'm friends with a lot of folks that are involved in the beer business here. But it's nice to kind of have a perspective from somebody who doesn't own a brewery. And tell us, so we'll get into some more of what you do with the beer judging and the home brewing stuff. But tell us a little bit where are you from, Sal, originally, and then how did you get into beer?
I originally am from Metairie, moved to the North Shore, Mandeville, right around 1995. Mm-hmm. The way that I got into beer, unofficially, is I would always take a sip of Dad's beer, and just ever since I was a kid, a young kid, I just really had an honest-to-God taste for how beer taste the various nuances of it, and just kind of grew from there. When I became 21, I was at school at Southeastern in Hammond, went to the Red, White, and Brew, kind of expanded my palate with their large offering of craft.
That's a big annual beer event there, and yeah, just want to, so people don't know what that is, but
Red, White, and Brew store.
Oh, the store. I'm sorry. Yes. Oh, okay. My apologies.
Yes. Yeah. No. They do the annual barbecue festival down there. Which is probably what you're thinking of.
Yep.
But it was a beer store that had a very wide range of beer, and just kind of expanded from there, which naturally led a couple years later into home brewing. I've been home brewing for about 7 years now, the home brewing eventually got me involved with the homebrew club in the North Shore, the Mystic Crew of Brew, whom I'm a member of. Once I started home brewing, I began to enter my beers into both. There wasn't really a lot of local competition several years ago, but competitions all over the place, all across the United States, which got me involved into judging beer. That's a quick version of how we got in how I got into that.
Cool. And I definitely want to come back to some of the home brewing stuff, which we'll do in the last half an hour of the show. I don't want to get too far away from the topic that we were talking about before the break, which was the rapidly expanding market of local breweries here in Southeast Louisiana and the state in general, really everywhere around the country. And we were mentioning something that you said, Sal, which I think is a really good point, that in certain places, say Colorado, California, where you could have, I mean, in San Diego, there's something like 50-something or 60-something breweries, I think, just in the city of San Diego alone. And, you know, here, having 32, 33 breweries in Louisiana, most of which are concentrated in Southeast Louisiana, as you said, it is a different market space here, isn't it?
It is a different market space. I think a few things that we have, say, going against us is that we are a relatively small metropolitan area. We are a major city, but compared to San Diego or Los Angeles or any of those counties around them, we are relatively small. Also, too, we've kind of, within maybe the last 10 years, we've really been kind of a bit of a barren wasteland when it comes to good local craft beer. Mm-hmm. So I think it's moving our general populace from that Bud Miller Coors saying, hey, guys, there's stuff other than that out there. Try it. But I think the rapid expansion as well. We're at, like I said, we're at 32 or 33 breweries. Within even the last 6 months, we've had six different breweries open up in the area.
Yeah, repeat that again.
within the last 6 months, we've had six breweries open up. Port Orleans, Low Road, Parlo.
Brewcaray, right?
Brewcaray, all of those guys, mm-hmm. a couple other ones. So the expansion is fast and furious, and these breweries that are coming out are really going to have to stand out and make themselves known.
That's a great point. It's not a point that I wanted to make and if you guys listen to the show regularly or around town. Here in Louisiana, I'm just going to state this for the record. If you don't know, we have to sell. If you're a producer, you have to sell through a distributor. It's called the second tier. We have a three-tiered system here. First tier is producer, second tier is distributor, third tier is going to be your retail or your on-premise, meaning restaurant or bar. You have to sell through the second tier. So if you're making beer here, and you referenced this, Sal, in the previous segment, was that that's a tough competition space because, as you said, people are competing for shelf space, but to compete for the shelf space, you have to compete with the distributor's attention to actually pick up your beer and sell it.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. In order to legally sell, and I also say shelf space, but you also have to remember tap space as
tap
well.
Tap space, yeah. On premise, yeah.
You have brewery reps trying to get their business, their tap on the wall compared to another one up there. I'm sorry, I went on a bit of a tangent, but you're absolutely correct that brewery distributors are going to look out for their best interest. In order to sell a beer in Louisiana, it's not like Vermont where you can just go ahead and load your beer up in the back of a van and go and sell it directly to the bars. You have to sell it to one of three or four major distributors in the New Orleans area. Those guys are kind of fighting, for tap space for them. But then even within there, those brewery reps are fighting for tap space for those guys. Mm-hmm. So it's people fighting on people who are fighting on people to try to get your stuff on the wall if you're a distributor.
It's a tough game. And what is your impression? We've had this rapid growth of local breweries and mostly small guys. Have we hit a saturation point? Or do you think that people are going to have to make themselves distinct, as I think we've noted, to make it. But are we getting to the point? I know, say, like we talk about this on the show a lot, Sal, on the restaurant business. It's called top ending, I believe. And the idea is that we've had a lot of places go out of business here, not because the restaurant's bad, but because arguably there's saturation in the marketplace. Do you think we've hit that yet, or hard to say? Or
I think we're getting relatively close. I think if you would have got in as a brewery about 5 years ago, you are pretty well established right now. Mm-hmm. These new guys, it's becoming exponentially tougher and tougher. With that being said, I do see a lot of new breweries popping up that are putting out good beers off the bat. Honestly, can I mention people?
Yeah, please.
I had Parlo Beer Labs out in the Bywater not long ago. They were fantastic. All of their beers were great. I see Brewcaray putting out good products in the quarter, putting out good products right off the bat. And there's great breweries, there's good breweries and not so great breweries,
right?
Or in Louisiana and the local area, and I think that's going to be self-correcting as time goes on. But it's definitely getting more competitive at a higher rate than it was a few years ago, for sure. Like I said, 6 months, you know, six breweries that fast.
Right, and it's coming that quick. Well, let's do this. We're going to take a bottom of the hour break here, Sal. And I do want to come back because I think one of the things that we want to talk about, too, is just making yourself distinct and producing good quality beer. And then, you know, the ability to actually sell the beer. So when we get to that third tier, how people are needing to improve maybe the way beers are actually sold. Different point. But friends, coming back here, we got the last half an hour of the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. Come on back.
This is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucouleurs. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc. A great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, Go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the last half an hour here at the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you be. A little Grateful Dead, let the good times roll. There you go. We're letting the good times roll here on the show. We're drinking beer. Oh, yeah. And we're talking with our friend Sal Mortellaro, beer expert, beer judge, and a man who brought us good beers. I think that's probably really your most important credential here, Sal, is the man who brought us good beers today. I'm kidding. But let's say, so we actually, I know you're all worried about us out there because we were talking about beer for the previous half an hour, and we weren't talking about what we were drinking. Rest assured, we were drinking beer. Okay. So what was the first thing you poured for us, Sal?
The first thing that we poured was from one of my hands-down favorite breweries in the state, definitely my top three breweries in the state. Old Rail Brewing, brew pub out of Mandeville. We had
our neighbor there in Old Van Mandeville, yes. Collectively. Yep.
Yes. We had their Munich Helles, which was a very lovely beer. If I get off of work and I'm looking for a beer, just a beer to drink, that's probably my go-to. The style is a Munich Helles. It's a malty but not overly sweet beer, very soft, dry, kind of balanced out by nice spicy floral hops, very crisp, very refreshing. It's definitely a lovely beer. It's a great beer for the summer heat that's coming up. Mm-hmm. That's already here. Mm-hmm. And for those who are really looking at making that transition between, you know, the larger light American lagers, Bud Miller Core, to something with more substance, more body,
and more complexity. And yes. I think one of the things that I really like about it, because I'm not a huge fan, I guess maybe in certain circumstances, when beers can become over malty and they taste sort of like those cheap carnation malts that you used to get at the ballpark. This has the malt was well in line in the balance in the beer.
Yes.
Great. When one thing, Sal, that I wanted to mention too before, and we're not going to unpack this too much, but we're talking about the challenges for local breweries and stuff to get into the marketplace. When we talked about the bottleneck, if you will, that could become the second tier of the distributor. But the difficulties, I think, and we don't have to talk about the regulatory level, but we'll do that. That'll conversation another time. But, you know, these products have to be hand sold to people in a lot of ways because these breweries don't have the marketing dollars to reach you through billboards and television commercials and advertisers like we're talking about on the Super Bowl. You know, you're not going to see Chifuncta Brewery advertising on the Super Bowl anytime soon. I hope they do, but it'll take a few years. And in this case, you've got to be able to hand sell. Are we starting to see that ability? I know in the bars, I think we really are, but are we starting to see that on the retail side, a little bit better ability to sell beer?
I think on the New Orleans area level, we're still seeing a lot of people going out there beating feet.
The breweries themselves.
Yep. I remember when Gnarly Barley first opened up, one of the owners, the wife of the brewmaster, Carrie, mm-hmm. Carrie Caramano, would go out there and she would beat feet herself and hit all the bars and try to get that tap space and get out there and do it. But even the probably one of the larger breweries, even for example, NOLA Brewing, you really don't see NOLA Brewing commercials or anything along those lines. So arguably one of the biggest breweries, except for Beta, right? Of yeah. course, that's a given.
Right.
But the second largest brewery, if you will, in the state, NOLA Brewing, you know, they still have to get out there and beat feet just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. And it's a really competitive thing. And it's funny, you go into beer stores and you'll take a look at, I was actually in 504, the beer store on Tulane. I think those guys are doing a good job and probably have them on the show in the near future talk about this stuff. But it was really interesting because a particular brewery rep was in there and actually their distributor was in there at the same time. And it was a really fun interaction to watch. And not that the distributor rep wasn't interested in selling their beer, but this guy was in there selling his beer. And you see the distributor rep is in there selling six other things and his was not the priority at the time. And he's getting the distributor rep's getting those orders from on high of what he's supposed to walk into and sell.
Correct.
And it's like, it was a very interesting dynamic, but that's what plays out. And I think people, lots of times it happens under your nose when you're in a grocery store or when you're in a beer store. If you're in there on a Tuesday afternoon, that's the stuff that's going on. It's actually really interesting.
Correct. And we kind of touched on that this past, before the break. I think a lot of people who are getting into brewing nowadays don't realize the struggle. You know, you have to go through the second tier. There's definitely a lot of struggle, a lot of kind of fighting, if you will. I don't mean to use that term, but a lot of, for lack of better terms, some fighting, some struggle undertones that in order to get your beer out there and get it promoted.
Yeah. Let's move forward here. So what are we drinking now, man? This is one of my favorite beers, actually.
Right now we are drinking probably one of the typical world-class beers for the style, Saison DuPont. Saison is a very nice, also a very nice summer drinking beer. It's going to be very well attenuated. This is a beer that really showcases yeast. The yeast, citrusy notes, phenolics, which is a spiciness, if you will.
Yep. And the spicy and the aroma. Yep.
So this is a very yeast-forward beer. I brought some beers that showcase all the various ingredients. Some malt. We got bacteria. We've got hops. And then we have yeast here. So brought a little bit of everything. This is going to be our yeast. Our yeast beer, if you will.
It's a great seasonal beer. Well, we have some time here, but I want to move through some of these beers and make sure we get to the event that you're doing and stuff. What makes a Saison a Saison?
A Saison is a particular style that comes from French Wallonia. It was what's called a provision ale, where it was brewed to a much lower strength, to where the before refrigeration and things along that kind of thing, they would brew a very lightly alcohol beer. They didn't understand back then about water and boiling and sanitization. Mm-hmm. They would make beer because beer was safer to drink than water. They would make this. It would sit out in the hot farmhouse, which would lead to these flavors without getting too much into how ambient temperature affects flavors of beers and phenolics. And that's the quick version of the history of the Saison. Through time, it became a stronger beer, more alcohol. But what makes a Saison is that it comes from or brewed in the style of the French Wallonia area, particularly the yeast that's used and as well as the malt bill, the grain and things like that.
Now, when with the yeast forward nature of the beer, Sal, in a certain sense, and I don't want to confuse the waters here too much, it sometimes like this one in particular reminds me of a Belgian white. And is that yeast characteristic that we're talking about? I kind of get that similar note.
That is actually that area of France is basically bordering Belgium.
Right.
So
okay.
these Saisons, when I say French Wallonia, it's that French speaking area of Belgium. That's exactly right. These are going to be very similar to those Belgian style beers.
This has been one of my favorites, and we kind of see this is more of a, at least popular here. It's more of a seasonal beer that we seem to get on the market. I mean, I know you can get certain ones year round, but I see more of these, like some of the local breweries and people like that are making stuff will make a Saison this time of year.
Correct. You'll see a lot of the lighter beers, the cream ales, the Kolsches. A lot of the easier drinking beers come out around this time of the year.
And, you know, Kolsch, that's another one. That's one of my favorite styles that I've kind of come to explore a little bit in the past couple of years. Can you tell people a little bit about Kolsch?
The German Kolsch comes from the Cologne region of Germany. These are going to be a very soft beer, relatively low in alcohol. They're going to be pretty dry. They're going to be a little bit fruity also from the yeast. There's going to be a little bit fruitiness to it. And sometimes that yeast will put off a minerally note. I'm a personal fan of just a slight note of sulfur in my Kolsch. Mm. I find it makes it a little bit more refreshing. Nothing obscene or, you know, obtrusive.
Sure. But, absolutely.
But also a very light, easy drinking, low alcohol summer beer.
You know, we talk about these things, and I want to highlight, because you said a touch of a sulfur note, and those, you know, listening, those who know a lot about wine, oftentimes we'll talk about a flavor note in a wine, and sometimes people will cringe, either a winemaker or a consumer will cringe when you say, well, I'm getting a note of asparagus on the red wine. That's not a bad thing if it's in line with the beer, if it's not a preponderance, if it's not overdone. And so these touches of, like, I mean, I love minerality on certain wines and in beers, and a sulfuric note on beers is actually can be a very, very nice thing.
Yes. Yeast actually naturally, as a byproduct, produce sulfur.
Right.
So that's where it comes from. It's no chemical additions or mineral additions. When even on the wine side, I mean, they don't without getting into water chemistry, they just don't dump sulfur or anything like that in there. These are all natural byproducts of the yeast itself.
Absolutely. When you say you get a cherry note in a wine, or you get a citrus note in a beer, for the most part, at least with wines, you're not adding the berries into the beer. And if you're not making a lemon ale, you're not putting citrus in the beer either. Those are notes of the phenolics that manifest in the beer.
Correct.
Well, let's do this, Sal. Let's take a break here, and then we're going to come through. We'll do a couple more beers, and then we're going to get on with the organization that you judge for, and then we're going to get on to the event in June. Does that sound good? Friends, come back to the NOLA Drink Show.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklab.com. Labnola.com.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour is 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Goodbye, Joe. I got to go. Me, oh, my, oh. I got to go. Pull a hero down the bio. My advice is the sweetest one. Me, oh, my, oh. Son of a gun.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, a little Tab Benoit, his version of Jambalaya. Oh, yeah, he just played a Jazz Fest, I know, he always does. Man, that guy's great. And actually, you know, he plays once a year or so up at Ruby's Roadhouse, which is there right outside of Old Mandeville, where I live, where Sal lives, who we're talking to. That's my segue. Talking about old Roadhouse right in our neighborhood. We're chatting with Sal Mortellaro, who is a beer judge and expert, and he is sharing some wonderful, wonderful beers with us. And Sal, you're a certified beer judge, man, and you talked about that a little bit at the top of the second segment with you. Now, you're doing a lot of home brewing judging, and those competitions, for people who don't know, it's a popular thing, man, the home brewing competition stuff.
It is. I am certified through the I got into a home brew judging approximately 2011. I am certified through the BJCP, or the Beer Judge Certification Program, which is literally a worldwide organization of about 6,400 judges worldwide. Homebrew competitions all throughout the world. I am a national ranked judge, so I'm in the upper 15% of judges worldwide. And do some other things in regards to the BJCP as far as administering exams, exam grading, exam proctoring.
Oh, so is it bringing up people through the judging ranks?
Yes, correct.
Okay, gotcha. That's cool.
With the BJCP, one of their mission, their actual mission statement is that they want to promote knowledge of beer styles, beer, mead, cider styles. They also want to basically spread appreciation of those styles. They want to go ahead and develop actual structured criteria of judging feedback, things like that. And it really goes even beyond the homebrewing competitions. For those who are the higher ranked judges, they can do various things, such as get invited to write for the Beer Connoisseur magazine. I actually just got an email the other day that I was accepted to judge the Great American Beer Festival.
Oh, cool. Congratulations.
In Denver, Colorado.
Man. Yeah,
so
fantastic.
That's pretty awesome. That's pretty much the Super Bowl of professional brewers throughout the world. So I'll be there sitting next to a bunch of really, really awesome industry people, brewers, people like that. So it is very in-depth. It is a very rigorous certification program. And I enjoy it. I've been doing it for about 6 years now and absolutely love it.
That's really cool, man. Speaking of loving something here, this beer that you poured for us is exceptional. And what are we drinking now, man? This is awesome.
This is a Cuvée Saint-Jacobin. It is a Flanders Red beer. This particular style is going to be a very malty beer, very low hops. You're going to get a lot of very dark stone fruit, cherries, plums. They are traditionally barrel aged, which for the wine people, you're going to get some tannic notes. But which is very interesting is that they actually inoculate it with certain bacteria, acetobacteria. And of course, drinking it, you taste that very acetic note to it. That comes from resident bacteria in the wood that they allow to munch on that malt and make that. You can get anywhere from this is more of a dark cherry, tart cherry kind of beer.
Yeah.
One of my other favorite beers is the Duchesse de Bourgogne, which is very balsamic vinegar-like. It almost tastes like you're drinking a balsamic
a vinegar. Yeah.
Basically,
and this has that note on it too. Yes. There's a very nice vinegar note to this in a very pleasant way. And it's funny actually when you're talking about cider, Sal, and certainly a sour ale that we're talking about. But here, if you had blind tasted me on this and I didn't see the color, I didn't see anything, I might have been confused and guessed that it was a cider, but that vinegar and that little bit of earthy tone in there would have screwed me up. And so I would have had no idea what it was that I was actually drinking.
Sure. And, you know, it kind of piggybacks one of the first things we talked about. Everybody thinks Bud Miller Coors. People don't realize, the general public as a whole doesn't realize the depth that beer flavors can come in.
Mm-hmm.
This beer is a bit wine-like. I mean, people don't realize that some beers almost border along very wine-like qualities. The Belgian triples are very champagne-like. These are just kind of some of your more earthy beers, which use Brettanomyces. You get that old-world wine kind of funk earthiness to it.
Mm-hmm.
Beer has a wide range other than the clear, you know, yellow water stuff. And I think a lot of people are starting to catch on to that and realize that.
Yeah, and if you want to be like a beer geek and walk into a place, and so Brettanomyces, which he was talking about, which sour beer, essentially, walk into a place, I always do this, and I don't do it because I'm trying to get street cred. I always just do it because I like it. But I'll say, do you have anything that has Brett on it? So you can just say Brett, and then people will think you know something. I don't know what I'm saying. I think there's some dude named Brett on the beer, and then I'm getting a beer. But this is sour beers are one of my favorite beers, and this is a really, really nice beer, man. I want to make sure that we mention too, we got about 5 minutes left, but I want to make sure you guys are doing a really cool event towards the end of June up on the North Shore. It's a benefit event taking place on the 24th of July, June, excuse me. Can you tell us a little bit about the event?
Sure. This event is basically Larry Hartzog's Twisted Homebrew and Beer Competition. We are in our sixth year of doing this. The quick story is that we had a longtime club member of the Mystic Crew of Brew who passed away unexpectedly. One of his loves outside of homebrewing beer was the St. Tammany Humane Society. This event is 100% of proceeds goes to the St. Tammany Humane Society. Tickets are on Eventbrite for $30 or $35 at the door. When you come in, there's going to be a whole bunch of different homebrew, a whole bunch of different commercial beers. I believe we're at a count of about 60 so far in between homebrew and commercial. It's probably one of the cheaper beer festivals in the area. One of the cheaper homebrew festivals in the area. It's going to be indoors at the Pelican Park Castine Center in Mandeville. And again, 100% of all the proceeds goes to help the puppies and kittens out there. So it's a very worthwhile cause.
That's a great organization. Yeah, and a good mutual friend of ours, Christian Serpas and Ghost Town, are a band, great band, big supporters. You guys going to have music at the event, actually?
This year, we are going to not do live music. There was some logistics with the Castine Center.
Gotcha.
But we have had live music every year past. But forward from here, we will try to have live music. We're doing a DJ this year, but we are going to have various food vendors as well as beer. It's going to be indoors in the middle of June. It's not going to be hot. It's from 4 to 8 p.m.
We're going to give away a couple tickets a little closer to the mark. So I'll announce that again as we'll wait till the beginning of June, and that'll be available on our Facebook page. And go ahead. So
I was going to say, for those who are interested in the BJCP, we have approximately 25 certified beer judges in the state. More are always welcome. You can go to www.bjcp.org, as in Beer Judge Certification Program.org. You can sign up to learn how to become a certified judge. I will actually be administering an exam in Mandeville in January of 18. It's one of the few exams that we have in Louisiana. Not a lot happened here. The closest usual location is Houston. So for those who are interested, stop by the website. Great opportunity to learn to become one and become certified. The more certified judges in Louisiana, the merrier.
Awesome. And we'll make sure we keep people apprised of that as we get closer to the mark there as well. We're going to have Sal back on the show. It's been a very interesting, Sal. I really appreciate it. You have a great depth of knowledge and you bring wonderful beers, man. So thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Friend Sal Mortilaro, who is, again, certified beer judge, brings good beers. Interesting conversation. I was telling Sal during the break that we are definitely going to have him back. We're going to talk. We'll have him back on a regular basis because I enjoyed the conversation greatly and enjoyed the beers greatly. So we're going to talk about seasonal beers and make sure you stay tuned for the event coming up on June 24th in Mandeville, a fundraising event for the St. Tammany Humane Society. And check out the judging stuff. We'll keep you apprised on that. And we'll give away a couple tickets to the fundraising event for the Humane Society a little closer to the mark, as I said. Friends, next week's show, we're going to be taping a lot of next week's show at Bakery Bar on Tuesday, talking with a lot of our friends in the service industry here in New Orleans about goings on around town, all that good stuff. And we'll probably have some other stuff coming up. But you know how I roll. I just kind of figure it out as I go. So friends, thanks for tuning in to the NOLA Drinks Show. Really appreciate it. If you're listening to the podcast, check it out. Check out everything on NOLADrinks.com. Check out our Facebook page and all the other social media interwebs. And friends, until then, cheers, y'all.